You're listening to the Whole Hog Football Podcast, bringing you the latest news, position analysis, and more. Here's your hosts, Matt Jones and Scotty Bordelon.
Arkansas is 2-0, the Razorbacks with a 44-30 victory over South Carolina last week at Razorback Stadium. 1-0 in SEC play for the second consecutive year. That hasn't happened in 18 years where the Razorbacks have won their SEC opener 2 years in a row. They'll step out of conference this week to take on Missouri State, an FCS team coached by Bobby Petrino. That's the storyline of the week, is that Petrino's coming back to Fayetteville for the first time since he was fired over a decade ago. We'll talk some about that game later today with Scotty Bordelon of WholeHogSports.com. I'm Matt Jones, but we're going to focus on the South Carolina game quite a bit and what we saw. And Scotty, it was pretty evident early on in that game that it was the Sanders show. Rocket Sanders on offense, Drew Sanders on defense, and those were the two guys that really stood out to me on Saturday. There were other players who made plays and had good games, but Rocket Sanders, 156 yards, two touchdowns rushing, and then you had Drew Sanders with 11 tackles, two sacks, two forced fumbles. Felt like he did a little bit of everything and was named National Defensive Player of the Week for it.
Yeah, I think what we saw from Drew Sanders is probably what Sam Pittman hoped that Drew would look like once he was, you know, on the field in an Arkansas uniform. You know, we heard a lot about him in the spring, you know, because we didn't know a whole lot about him in the spring when we first laid eyes on him. But, you know, you're getting a transfer from Alabama who is a really freaky athlete who did a little bit of everything in high school. He's a former five-star athlete, played both sides of the ball in high school. He's really a terrific player then. And gets to Alabama, and, you know, Alabama had an injury to one of its best linebackers last season early, and Drew stepped in, and, you know, Nick Saban said that, you know, he thought Drew did a great job filling in that role. And, you know, he was a guy that with the Crimson Tide had special teams player of the week honors against Arkansas in 2020 and then against Cincinnati in 2021, the college football playoff. So the guy's super versatile. And I think we all got a really good glimpse of that. I mean, just running sideline to sideline, making tackles, breaking up passes, had two more sacks. Like, he leads the team in sacks through 2 weeks with three. And I think he's tied for the third best pass rush grade on Pro Football Focus in the entire FBS, which, I mean, that's really ideal. As we heard in the preseason that he was an elite pass rusher, but we just hadn't seen it yet. And, you know, in the spring, all of his teammates, especially on the offensive side of the ball, were talking about this swim move that makes Drew really, really good. And we've seen that a lot in the first 2 weeks. And it's kind of one of those deals where he runs up to the guy and he's so quick and athletic that he does that swim move, but sometimes he doesn't even touch the player that he's swimming. And he just gets into the backfield and just creates havoc, and very deserving of all the honors that he got this week. I can't believe a guy, actually I can, but he gets National Defensive Player of the Week by, you know, one publication or one award foundation, and then he gets co-SEC Defensive Player of the Week. I thought he was by far the most dominant player on the field for Arkansas in week two, and the Rocket was great again. I really think that we're seeing him blossom into one of the more electric players in the SEC, and he showed us a little bit of his pass-catching ability and what he can do, you know, after he fields a pass from KJ Jefferson. Like, he was terrific on that first drive. I think Arkansas went 70 or 75 yards, and he had more than 50 total yards on that series. He was just terrific throughout. And, you know, his offensive line probably deserves a lot of credit for the success he had, but Rocket's really good at, you know, being patient and finding holes. And then once he sees that hole, he gets through it really, really quickly.
On the co-SEC Defensive Player of the Week point that you made, you know, it's always about, well, two things come to mind. Number one, beauty's in the eye of the beholder, right? You know, so the Walter Kemp Foundation, that was the one who gave Sanders his Defensive Player of the Week, National Defensive Player of the Week. The SEC, it's got its own set of voters. And then it's also good PR. I mean, it's PR 101 that you get as many players involved in those awards as you can. I know people don't want to hear that, and there's are a number of people out there who thinks that Arkansas players get slighted with these co-player of the week
100%,
awards. But you can't, you know, but you can look at it the other way around. You know, the other team has to share it too with an Arkansas player. And you look at the guy that he shared it with, by the way, the Kentucky linebacker, Jordan Wright. If you watch that Florida Kentucky game, the one-handed interception that he made in that game completely changed that game. It was 16-7 at that point, and he finished Saturday with the interception, you know, the return that obviously set up a touchdown that changed that game. He had a sack, he forced a fumble. So, you know, that's a pretty good game, you know, for him too.
Yeah, he was a big part. What, Kentucky's got a winning streak in that series now for the first time since the late 70s. So, you know, a player that had a big part in that happening. You know, I understand why he gets that award. Yeah, it was a really nice interception.
Yeah, I mean, it was play of the day as far as I'm concerned, a one-handed interception that just completely, you know, turned that game on its ear. You know, we talked about Rocket Sanders. It was pretty evident early on that Arkansas felt like they could push South Carolina around at the line of scrimmage. They did it offensively. They even did it to an extent defensively. They finished with six sacks of Spencer Rattler. But you look at it from the offensive standpoint, and you looked this up after the game, that it was the most carries that they had in a game since 2014, the game against Texas Tech down in Lubbock, when they ran, I think, like 68 times. And for, you know, whoever, how, you know, who knows how many yards they had in that game, and a lot of rushing touchdowns. They beat Texas Tech that day. Pittman was the offensive line coach that day. It just feels like that type of game is really the type of game that I think he wants to, not to say that they can't play a different style offensively, because we've seen him do it, but man, if you can control the line of scrimmage, it seems like that's what he wants the identity of this offense to be.
Yeah, for sure. There's no doubt about it. I think I tweeted that like midway through the second quarter, Arkansas's offensive line was just leaning on South Carolina's front. And I think we wrote in the 10 keys for the game day insert last week that, you know, offensive line play, trench play, that's probably going to be one of our keys every week, honestly, especially in an SEC game or against a team that you feel like is pretty physical. But I kind of got a little bit specific with some of South Carolina's edge rushers, because I think, you know, South Carolina against in their week one game, they had like five or six tackles for loss, and more than half of those came from edge guys. And so you're thinking that, you know, Luke Jones and Dalton Wagner are probably going to be tested again, you know, in week two with some pretty quick, twitchy guys. And Sam Pittman, like late or early last week, was just like, guys, look, we believe that the key to winning this game is if you guys just take control of it. And I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall in that room to see his offensive lineman's reaction to him challenging them with that. I think that would, I wish I would have in retrospect asked Sam what their reaction was to getting that challenge from him. I'm sure they were all on board with that. They love that physicality and the toughness and the grit aspect of, you know, it's being a really physical football team, and, you know, they take a lot of pride in having a really good run game, because it all starts with them. But yeah, I think if, you know, a lot of times I'll go home during like holidays and stuff, and, you know, there's obviously a lot of excitement with Arkansas football, and some of my family members will ask me, you know, what it's like covering Arkansas football now, maybe versus years in the past, or what it's like covering Sam. And I think from now on, at least right now, if somebody asks me that again soon, I'll probably just show them the first half tape from the South Carolina game, and we're like, this is what Sam Pittman and Arkansas football is like. That was like as Sam Pittman of the first half, I think, as you're going to see. And they obviously want to replicate that every week, but that was a pretty special offensive line performance, I thought, for at least the first half. You know, there were some obvious struggles in the second to get going, but when that game got close, they, you know, they were able to put it away.
I used the headline in our magazine this last week, Bully Ball, because that's really what it is. It's, you know, they know what you're going to do, you know what you're going to do, and it's up to them to stop you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I went back and rewatched some of the game from Saturday this morning just to get some context on a story I'm writing. It just seemed like on, you know, like every other carry, Arkansas was picking up a first down with its run game. And I think Sam just takes a lot of pride in just being able, like I said, to lean on those defensive linemen on the other side of the ball, just because he trusts his guys so much. And I think the group that he has right now are that those guys are going to be really, I think maybe those they're foundation pieces for, I think, what he wants that offensive line to become like on a yearly basis. He's got a really veteran group of guys that are tough and nasty. And, you know, they're veterans too. Like they've got over 100 combined starts between them and got a, you know, several captain worthy guys on that front too. Played a long time. It's just that was Sam Pittman football at its finest in that first half.
You know, what was interesting to me was all the short touchdown runs for Arkansas. And we talked about before
I think there
the
was
season.
Three within 2 yards.
I think it was four, actually. Four, I think there were four, because A.J. Green, DeBinion, Jefferson, and Sanders all had either a 1 or a 2 yard touchdown run. And we talked about, you know, before the season and even last week that Dominic Johnson's their goal line guy, their short yardage guy, and he didn't play. There was the possibility that he might. He dressed out, didn't play. I guess that possibility exists, you know, that he could be back for the Missouri State game this week, which was, it fits more in line with the return that they had with him or for him before the season started. Rocket, we know he's a physical guy. KJ Jefferson, we know he likes the physicality, likes to, you know, take the hit. But, you know, Green and DeBinion, I guess we saw this with DeBinion a little bit week one, but, you know, they're facing bigger, stronger, more physical linemen from South Carolina. I thought they showed something in those short yardage situations.
Yeah, they did. And I think DeBinion is I think somewhere in between, you know, there's kind of a gap in the size between Rocket and AJ Green. But I think DeBinion is that in between back. Like he's really shifty. We saw that in week one and that really stood out in the spring. I just didn't know how it was going to translate to a game like situation, but it obviously did. I think DeBinion's going to be a really, really good back, and he can make guys miss in a phone booth. And obviously, like you said, I think he's going to be a great goal line back option to have. Like maybe if you have another situation, like, you know, where Rocket had that long run where he got taken down inside the five, you want to get a little bit of a bigger bodied back in there. You know, Dominic Johnson not available. Well, I think Rashad DeBinion's a great option to have there. And so whether KJ keeps the ball or hands off to a running back, you got a pretty physical guy that's going to be, you know, trying to get the ball across the goal line that can typically fall forward and pick up the yardage you need.
Jefferson went 18 of 21 against South Carolina. Not a whole lot of yards. I think it was somewhere around 160 yards through a 23-yard touchdown pass to Warren Thompson at a pretty critical point in the game after a turnover. But they didn't really ask him to do a whole lot. It felt like it's the type of offense that we've, you know, seen from Briles, which is kind of this safe passing game, not a whole lot of deep shots, but, you know, it's an effective passing game. And it felt like, I don't know, probably what, a half, maybe a third of his completions were on those little push passes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. I think you're right. You know, KJ completed, I think, his first 10 passes before one finally, you know, didn't reach its mark. But several of those were, like you said, kind of those forward pitches to a guy like Jaden Hazelwood, who, you know, he took the pitch and ended up making a guy miss, deformed another one, and then threw another defensive back to the ground. It's quite a bit of that kind of stuff. But I think the thing that's standing out to me is, you know, the kind of just the way that Kendall knows his personnel right now. Like he knows that he has a bunch of guys that can definitely make plays when they get the ball in their hands, and I feel like he's used like an inordinate number of kind of unique sets and formations, you know, kind of eye candy for the defense. Like Hazelwood lining up in the backfield next to KJ. I think just the versatility of the formations and the sets that they're running, and then they're keeping things. While I say that, and it can look pretty intricate, especially when you consider all the pre-snap motions and stuff. I think they're not overthinking things too much, and they're just kind of going with what works for them. And you know, through the first two games, I wrote that Arkansas's had 7 players carry the football, and they've had 8 different guys on the receiving end of one of KJ's passes. And so the versatility on offense right now, the number of playmakers they have, I think that's what's really stood out to me through the first couple games.
Defensively, Arkansas, again, good in the first half, not great in the second half. And that's a trend that, you know, probably not very hard to see in the first two games. You know, Cincinnati, They didn't give up a score in the first half. Certainly, Cincinnati got into scoring range, but didn't score, and then scored 24 points after halftime. And then against South Carolina, 9 points in the first half, 21 points after halftime. I think that's a concern. And then I think it's going to be a concern all year for Arkansas, the pass coverage, especially with Jalen Catalon being out for the rest of the year. Pittman announced that after the game. They didn't have Miles Slusher in the game against the Gamecocks. He's supposed to be back this week, probably. But it just feels like this pass defense is going to be, something that you kind of have to maybe grit your teeth and grin and bear it, so to speak, the rest of the year.
Yeah, I think so. And outside of Dwight McLaughlin, who's got two picks in his first two games and has looked like, outside of Drew Sanders, he's honestly been one of Arkansas's best defensive players, just, kind of making things happen. But other than him, I think they're like almost every guy in that defensive secondary has been, targeted at times and, maybe given up some big plays. I still think that Nudy and Hudson Clark are clearly Arkansas's two top two corner options. Hudson Clark, I think, got beat a couple times deep. That was kind of a little bit surprising to me. I know it's happened in the past, but he's normally a guy that, he'll give up those 8 to 14 yard gains, but he's pretty technically sound and won't typically let guys get past him, on deep balls. And I think some of the, Spencer Rattler threw for what, upwards of 350 yards, maybe more than that. And I think some of that was just you got Arkansas's got guys in positions that they haven't really been in before. Like Kari Johnson was, I think in week one maybe he was kind of in the two deep, might have been a third cornerback in week one, and now he's getting a start because Miles Slusher is out and Jalen Catalon's out, and now you're counting on second and third team guys to kind of fill those roles, and it's a challenge when you've got a guy that. Like Spencer Rattler, who, he might not be the most accurate guy in the world, but he's really not afraid to sling the ball around. So I think it's going to take some guys some time to kind of get acclimated. They're going to go through some growing pains, and maybe that's what we saw a little bit last week.
Sam Pittman said before the season that he thought that they would be able to get some more coverage sacks this year. I don't know if that's necessarily going to be the case, just based on what we've seen the first two games at least, but it feels like they're getting more push up front and more rush from that front seven than we thought they were going to. Sanders has got three sacks through two games. Dominic's got a couple of sacks. They're one of the top teams. I think they might be the top team in the SEC right now, top five nationally. In sacks through 2 weeks, and it's not exactly against FCS and Group of Five teams that they're doing this against. I know Cincinnati's a Group of Five team, but they're not your typical Group of Five.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think to your point, like I think their initial pass rush is maybe farther along than I expected it to be. I mean, and it's different guys doing it. I know Jashaud Stewart, I think, had a half sack. Bumper Pools got one. I think that he had the first full sack of his career at a really, really opportune time against South Carolina. Drew Sanders got several. Terry Hampton's been making some plays in the backfield. I mean, I know that wasn't a sack, but that's that initial burst off the line that we're talking about. It's kind of goes hand in hand, I think, just being able to beat your guy off the ball as soon as it snapped. That's been pretty impressive. I think Landon Jackson, if he can, he really flashed in week one. I think in against South Carolina, maybe didn't have as much success as he was maybe hoping he would. I think he got hit with a face or a hands to the face penalty. They'll get that cleaned up, I'm sure. But yeah, he's another guy that can give you some really good pass rush help. And Jordan Dominic's been great, right? Like, I know he hasn't been super dominant, I wouldn't say, but he's come up with, I think, in back-to-back weeks, he's got a fourth quarter sack that has, immediately led to points for Arkansas's offense. So I think right now Sam feels like the team's in a pretty good shape because I think they're playing pretty good complementary football.
Special teams didn't stand out in a positive or a negative way against South Carolina. And I guess from the negative standpoint, that it didn't stand out negatively, that is a positive based on all of the talk going into the game that, South Carolina has bought more kicks than any other SEC team in the last couple of years. And this talk about Beamer ball. And, there weren't any breakdowns in special teams other than there might have been a kickoff return for South Carolina that went for a little bit longer than you wanted to see if you're Arkansas, but otherwise they were clean in that phase.
Yeah, didn't South Carolina recover an onside kick maybe late in that
They
game?
did. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so that was maybe something else that you got to look at a little bit closer, especially with your hands team. But on the other hand too, like Bumper takes,
He recovered two onside kicks too. So I mean, they were two for three in recovering them.
yeah, for sure. Like he took that Sunday hop on one of the kicks and returned it, and now he's Arkansas's leader in kickoff return yards, which is that was probably my favorite thing that happened last week. And I asked Sam about that sequence after the game Saturday, and he said that Bumper was pretty funny. He came over and punched Sam in the gut and said, "Hands, baby." And that was a pretty fun moment. He was really happy for Bumper. He sees Bumper as a guy, even though he's a Texas kid that kind of bleeds Arkansas in the same sense that maybe Grant Morgan and Hayden Henry did last year. So he's obviously really pumped to have him back. But yeah, special teams was pretty sound, I think, especially in like coverage and kickoff return and kick returns and that kind of thing. I know I'm sure Cam Little's kind of kicking himself about the field goal that he missed, but I think Cam Little is probably the least of Sam's worries right now with special teams.
The Whole Hog Football Podcast is sponsored by Kendall King. Kendall King is a retail execution company based in Bentonville. For more than 30 years, they've helped leading brands deliver creative POP solutions to their retail partners. Design, displays, signage, KendallKing.com. That's KendallKing.com.
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
Want more coverage of your home team? Download the Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Check out the Fan Zone and get up-to-the-minute videos, podcasts, and features on football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. Search for Whole Hog Sports on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire at home. And take it with you on the go by downloading it for your mobile device in your app store. The Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Get it today.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Football Podcast.
Hope you'll join us at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club next week. Next Wednesday, Maria Fossey, the former Razorback NCAA champion golfer, now on the LPGA Tour, will be at the sports club to talk about her career, also about the upcoming Northwest Arkansas LPGA Championship at Pinnacle Hills in Rogers. For ticket information, go to nwadealpiggy.com. That's nwadealpiggy. Maria Fossey on September 21st. Joined now by Ethan Westerman. Ethan writes a scouting report for Hogs Illustrated Magazine each week, and we brought him in to talk about Missouri State. Ethan, Missouri State is your typical, Bobby Petrino team. It's a team that's going to put a really good offense, an elite offense, I guess, from an FCS perspective, but a really good offense that's going to potentially give Arkansas some problems. The thing with Petrino, whenever throughout his career, whether it be, here in Fayetteville or the stints he's had at Louisville, the other places that he's been as an offensive coordinator, really one of the best coaches I think that there is in creating mismatches and finding holes on the field. And I think if you've watched Arkansas for the first 2 weeks, that gives you a little bit of concern for Saturday night.
Yeah, and what he's done with this year's team is brought a lot of guys from Power Five programs in, and they've really been doing well early on. So I actually read an interesting quote earlier today on an ESPN article from their quarterback, Jason Shelley. He said that Shelley gave their team the nickname the Bad News Bears because he says everybody has a story here. Everybody has a struggle they went through that brought them to this point, even Coach Petrino, just kind of referencing that all of them have, kind of fallen from those Power Five ranks, but now they've all landed up on his team there in Springfield. Yeah, they have quite a few weapons coming in from some bigger name schools.
Shelley is the guy I think to really watch on Saturday night. This was the 2021 Missouri Valley Conference Player of the Year. Finished 10th in the Walter Payton Award voting last year, which the Walter Payton Award is given to the best offensive player in FCS. Used to be the FCS Player of the Year, almost like the Heisman Trophy is, and then they split it up to where you've got the Payton Award for offense, you've got a separate award for defense. But he's a really legitimate player who, like you said, is one of those transfers, began his career at Utah.
Yeah, and he's not only explosive passing the ball, but he can run it too. Last year, he passed for 3,347 yards, had 3,789 total offense, which just shows that he can do it all. He's a really good passer, and he's really good out of the pocket too.
Yeah, Shelley's an interesting guy to me, I think, as I was looking through his bio a little bit earlier, after I watched a couple of the Missouri State players' press conference after Bobby Petrino went yesterday. And I think Shelley just kind of it struck me a little bit that he's just pretty composed and poised, I think. I think you can kind of tell a lot about a player, and kind of who they are, kind of their makeup, and maybe in the way that they handle themselves in those interview settings. And he was super poised, I thought. And then I looked at his bio, and he's 23 years old. So he's been around the block a time or two. You know, he's one of those guys that Ethan mentioned that, you know, he started his career, I believe, at Utah, and then went to Utah State. And he's played in some fairly big environments too. You know, last year, you know, he nearly led Missouri State to a win at Oklahoma State, who was like a play away from making the college football playoff. So he's definitely going to be a guy that Arkansas has got to really pay a lot of attention to, especially with his legs. So I wouldn't be surprised if this is maybe the week that Arkansas maybe goes to its dime package, puts six DBs on the field, and that means that, you know, the field's going to be spread for Shelley to maybe take off or tuck the ball and run, and, you know, maybe try to hurt Arkansas with his feet.
And that dime package within that might see some of that Barry Odom special drop eight rush three this week.
Yeah, I think this week, you know, if Arkansas does, you know, just rush three, I think that's going to put a lot of responsibility on, you know, Bumper Pool and Drew Sanders to be able to run sideline to sideline and make plays. And Arkansas, I think, is going to need Drew Sanders to maybe not play as well as he did last week, but still, you know, have a you know, put his fingerprints all over the game, you know, just with his speed and athleticism. And I think he was a little bit shaky in week one in terms of like missing tackles. I don't think this is a week where, you know, you need to see a drop off with Drew in terms of that. He was pretty sound last week against South Carolina. He was obviously pretty fired up for that game and played like it. So I just think that the linebackers they're going to be tasked with a lot, just because there's going to be so much open space, I think, for Shelley to potentially take advantage of.
So Scotty, one thing that we were talking about earlier, and Ethan, you wrote about this too, to an extent, is the OU and OSU games last couple of years. And it's that Missouri State's not going to be intimidated, I think, when it comes to Fayetteville, because they've been in Norman, they've been in Stillwater. And say what you want about Big 12 ball, but both of those programs have put a lot of linemen into, you know, professional football. And so I don't think the offensive line, the defensive line, the line of scrimmage is going to, I shouldn't say overwhelm, because it might overwhelm Missouri State, but I don't think it's going to intimidate these Missouri State players because of the environments that they played in the last couple of years. But then on top of that, you look at their roster, and you know, we've talked about Shelley coming in from Utah. Jordan Jones, a former Razorback, is on this roster now. He came in from Cincinnati most recently, of course, played for the Razorbacks. You've got guys in there from Mississippi State and Kansas State and Florida State, Boise State, a lot of big schools certainly that are represented on that roster. And so I don't know that this is going to be a team that's intimidated. They might very well might be out talented, and it wouldn't surprise me if they are, but I don't know that the intimidation level is going to be there like you might see with some other FCS teams.
Yeah, I think that's true. And then, you know, I was listening to those interviews with Missouri State players, and the guy that was sitting next to Shelley was his running back, Jacardier Wright. And he's going to be another one that's not intimidated by an atmosphere like Arkansas, I would have to imagine. I think he started his career in the Big 12, and so he's seen some of the, you know, some of the unique environments, like Iowa State. Like, you don't think Iowa State's probably not a game day atmosphere that you immediately think of, that, you know, is pretty hostile and rowdy. But, you know, when Iowa State's really good, it can be crazy, because all there is to do in Iowa is drink Bush Light and then go watch Iowa State football, right? And so it can be pretty intimidating. And then, you know, Baylor, kind of along those same lines, without the beer drinking, but it can be, you know, a pretty hostile place when their team is good. And then he mentioned Texas too, you know, as a place that he's played in before. So I don't think Razorback Stadium is going to be necessarily like a deer in the headlights moment for him. That could come, I think, but it would, if it does, it would probably be in the form of, you know, he has a, you know, less than ideal run in with Drew Sanders or Bumper Pool or somebody like that.
Hey, trust me, they're throwing him back in Waco, Ethan.
Yeah, they, so I watched their game against UCA. They opened the season down there in Conway, and Jacardia Wright didn't really have that good of a game. He, I think he had like a little north of 10 carries, like 30 something yards. But then against UT Martin this past week, he really had a nice game. He ran for 120 yards. I know I watched Coach Petrino's interview after that, and he had a lot of praise for Jacardia Wright in that game. So I think that, yeah, he's definitely a player Arkansas has to look out for. He's got a lot of burst at the line of scrimmage, which, yeah, I just think that experience, you know, playing at a high-level program probably has benefited him a lot now down in the FCS ranks.
Yeah, he's kind of a big-bodied back too. Maybe they got him on the roster at 6'2", 220, so a little bit low to the ground. So just another guy that Arkansas has got to make sure that they wrap up and, you know, eliminate big plays when they can.
You know, I alluded to this earlier that I feel like the Petrino angle this week is going to be overplayed to a certain extent. Obviously, it's noteworthy that you've got a former coach coming back to Arkansas. It's something that actually has happened quite a bit, so you wouldn't say that it's super rare, but it is pretty rare. I mean, Lou Holtz, Houston Nutt, Jack Crow for the game against Arkansas to begin the 2012 season. They're the most recent examples. You could go back to the 1930s. Francis Schmidt left Arkansas for TCU and brought TCU back for some conference, or brought him back for one conference game. They played three conference games against the Razorbacks while he was coaching in Fort Worth. I don't know that this really means a whole lot to the players, the Petrino stuff. I mean, you know, you got the kids that are from Arkansas who, you know, I guess the oldest ones would have been maybe 11, 12 years old when this happened, you know, with Petrino being fired in 2012. But I feel like, obviously, it's going to be a big deal to the crowd. It's a little bit different, though, than, like, say, the Texas game last year, where you've got all these Texas kids on the roster. But they probably have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder because they're playing Texas. They weren't recruited by Texas. And I'm just talking about this from an overall, you know, atmosphere standpoint, because there is going to be some hostility in the crowd, I'm sure, with Petrino coming back. But it feels to me like all of that stuff with Petrino coming back is overblown, with one exception, and it's the fact that he's just such a good offensive schemer. And it feels like Missouri State probably isn't going to be able to slow Arkansas down a whole lot offensively. This is a game where I've seen something this week, I think, where Arkansas is like a 39-point favorite. I certainly think that's a pretty high point spread. But I feel like Arkansas is going to put up its points. It's going to come down to whether or not Arkansas can stop this Petrino offense.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the Petrino offense, I mean, just like Arkansas fans can remember, it's just super explosive. They get a lot of chunk plays on offense. They got a really good wide receiver in Ty Scott, who is definitely going to challenge the secondary some. So, yeah, I think that point spread's a little bit high just because of the fact that I think the defense, I mean, to cover that spread, I mean, the offense would have to put up a crazy amount of numbers, I think, because I don't expect Missouri State to just not score any points or anything.
I'm not sure that this game means a single thing to Arkansas's players. Like, they obviously have no attachment to Bobby. And, you know, Missouri State's players, the two that spoke on Monday, they're like, you know, it's just another game for them too. You know, I think honestly, it does mean something to them because their coaches, you know, kind of the biggest story of the weekend in terms of this game. But I just think, I don't think it'll be close. I think my prediction was like something along the lines of 49-17. I think Missouri State might score some points, but I think Arkansas is going to be able to essentially do whatever it wants on offense, especially in the run game. I just like if Arkansas overmatched South Carolina's defensive line, just imagine what they're going to do, what they could do potentially to Missouri State's front. I honestly think they'll be able to maybe name their rushing total.
Yeah, that's just an SEC team against an FCS team, regardless of what FCS team you're talking about. I just don't think that they've got the horses up front to match up with these SEC teams, not just up front, but, you know, you could say that pretty much every position most likely. And I'm looking here, the latest point spread is Arkansas by 28.5, a little bit more, I think, in line with what we all think the game might be like.
Yeah, I think Arkansas has been pretty good covering the spread either way, you know, either if they're a favored or an underdog, you know, since Sam has been here. So I think if my score prediction holds up, I think if my math is right, I'm not really great at math or numbers, but I think if Arkansas ends up scoring 49, I think they'll cover pretty easily.
One more before we get out of here. Arkansas are going to get Miles Slusher back most likely this week. Scotty, we mentioned earlier that Dominic Johnson could potentially be back. What do you think that their additions do to this team?
I think it just allows you an opportunity to work Dominic, particularly with Dominic Johnson, just to get his feet wet, you know, ahead of Arkansas's toughest stretch of the schedule, right? Like you go to A&M and then Alabama, and then you got three straight road games and places that are not easy to win at. So I think just working him back in any way you can. Maybe this is the week that, you know, Rockets carry the ball quite a bit the first 2 weeks, and I know they talked about his workload, maybe wanting to minimize that, or not minimize it, but maybe take a few carries off his plate. Maybe this is the week that you get Dominique back in. I just didn't think that it would happen last week, because I don't think that you want his first game action since his injury to be against an SEC caliber defense. And this is, I think this game came at a perfect time for him. In the secondary, you know, I think, you know, anytime you can get a player like Miles Slusher back on the field, you know, maybe even if he's not 100%, it gives you more leadership, more experience. More guys that have games under their belt. Like Arkansas last week played Kari Johnson. I think he started for the first time in his career, and he didn't play against Cincinnati, as far as I know, especially on the defensive side of the ball. So just if Arkansas is able to get those two guys back, I think it's a good stepping stone for those guys heading into a really, really, really important stretch of the year.
Arkansas and Missouri State at 6 o'clock Saturday night. This is going to be the game this year that's not on television. You've got to watch this through a streaming provider, either ESPN Plus or SEC Network Plus. We'll be back with a podcast later in the week with Tom Murphy as we continue to preview the game. We'll also give our weekend predictions. Hope you join us at wholehogsports.com. Until then, and we'll see you later this week on the Whole Hog Football Podcast.
The proceeding has been a production of wholehogsports.com. Look for our latest podcasts on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at wholehogsports.com for the latest news and commentary.